Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. You know that sinking feeling when your team blows a lead in the final minutes? That's exactly how it feels when your website crashes during your biggest promotion. Or, for me, when I'm trying to post content after a big game. Between juggling client meetings, managing your website, and keeping up with everyday tasks, who has time to stress about WordPress security or slow loading times? That's where Kinsta comes in. Whether you're a business owner, web developer, or running a digital agency, Kinsta makes managing your website easy and efficient, so you can spend your time on what matters most. Kinsta gives you complete peace of mind by ensuring that your WordPress sites are always online, secure, and performing at their best. Their lightning-fast load times can boost your site speed by up to 200%, and their human-only support team responds in minutes, not hours. Plus, if you're switching from another host, Kinsta offers unlimited free expert migrations. They'll handle everything without any downtime. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit Kinsta.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today. It is a Thursday morning, and you are looking live at the Vidara in downtown Las Vegas, Nevada. Not technically downtown, but the strip in the heart of the Las Vegas Strip, Las Vegas Boulevard, as I am here for basketball and golf. And as much gambling fun as my wallet can sustain. I hope to win some money, but so far it is not going well. All right, thank you for indulging me and missing a day. My regularly scheduled podcast did not drop as per usual. I was traveling, and then I got here, and I was like, I'm on vacation for one day, but now it's Thursday morning, and oh my God, so much shit has been happening in the world of sports. I'm like, I have got to talk about some of this stuff. So without further ado, let's get right to it. First of all, I want to apologize. The Palm Power Lunch audio was not right, and several of you made sure to point that out. Kind of like the father-in-law in Christmas Vacation. Clark, those lights aren't twinkling. Yeah, Dad, thank you for noticing. Now, look, I fucked that up. Just some inside technical baseball here. I recorded that with two Rode Rode Wireless Pro lavalier mics that connect to this piece of software called Rode Connect on my laptop. Solly and Mr. X were wearing the lavaliers. They are omnidirectional mics that are clipped to their shirts. I was on a Rode NT Mini microphone on a stick, which is a really good mic. It's small, it's portable, but if you're not right up on it, meaning you're right up on it like this, then it draws a lot of ambient sound from around the room to try to catch your voice. It draws your voice from far away. I was not digging into that mic enough. So what it was doing was is automatically adjusting the gain. And that's why I sounded distant and there was an echo. But the reason that I did it that way is I'm really trying to get the most minimalist and least intrusive podcast setup, so that I get better stuff out of my guests. They don't feel like they've got to wear headphones and lean into a microphone. They can sit back and relax and just talk. And then I want to be able to deliver the cleanest audio possible. So, you know, it's an ongoing process. Right now I am recording on another piece of Rode equipment. That is their headset system. I forget what they call this. Hold on a second. It's their Rode headset that's got a mic on it. How does it sound right now? My room is lovely here at the Vidara. It is a little bit live right now. You can maybe hear. Well, actually, you're not going to hear the echoing in the walls because I'm going to send this through a processor on my Final Cut Pro, which will be voice isolation, so it will really take out a lot of the echo. You'll just hear my voice. I know. People are like, shoot, just get to the goddamn sports. Nobody cares about this stuff. Somebody might. Someone else in the podcast business or just in general that's curious about the tech behind it all might wonder, well, why is it this way? So we've got the Kevin Willard situation with Maryland, which has completely gone off the rails. He will coach today, tonight, but he will likely be gone tomorrow if Maryland loses. Russell Wilson's popped up again. We got this ESPN and baseball thing, given the fact that baseball starts today. There's a good piece of audio from Mad Dog Russo with the commissioner, Rob Manfred, saying, yeah, I don't understand why we get treated like such a bitch by ESPN, but we were not going to take a pay cut. And we said, that's it. We're out. Also, LeBron versus Stephen A. Smith, of course, is in the news. And I've got some thoughts on Vegas in general. So let's begin on the Willard situation. Kevin Willard, this week, has not committed to Maryland. He has not signed a new contract extension, even though there is one waiting for him. And he has deflected all questions of this in every press conference he's given so far. Villanova is still open as a job. We know that Villanova wants him. Until Villanova is filled and until Willard signs an extension at Maryland, the operating theory has got to be, oh, he's leaving, that he's going to Villanova. This is a bad look on so many fronts. First of all, here's a tweet. Kevin Willard has spent 18 years as a college head coach. During that time, he has a sub-500 conference record, one regular season title, one conference tournament title, one trip to the second weekend. And somehow he's managed to make himself the story of Maryland's March. Then there is this about Kevin Willard and the leverage he has employed. Let's see. Hold on. Tabs. I got three different tweets on them here. Could have organized this better. Oh, yeah. If Willard can leverage this from J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington, if Willard can leverage his lone Sweet 16 in 20 years of coaching, imagine what would happen if he made an actual Final Four. He'd probably have the Lakers and the Celtics fighting over him. Jeff Ehrman, who covers Maryland sports, says no one has leveraged their big moment this thoroughly since the Hawk Tua girl. By the way, Haley Welch has resurfaced 4 months underground with her social media. She has popped up and put out a video mocking the rumors that she was dead or that she was pregnant. Nothing since, though. Just one little video to say I'm alive, and yeah, these rumors are crazy. But again, back to Willard. Here's another tweet. I've criticized Willard's character for 2 years, criticized his abilities when I reported on the team last year. This is from Andrew Chodes. He does, he does some newsletter, whatever. Criticized his abilities when I reported on the team last year. Didn't back down despite his antics. This decision proves he is much more than just a bad coach. He created a shitstorm, and he is now lying all the way through it. Roll Terps tomorrow. So this guy, Andrew Chodes, still is a Terps fan despite it. Pete Haley, who I know a little bit from his time at NBC Sports Washington, when he was on the air in a more on-air, front-facing, camera-facing role. He is now, according to his Twitter account, a researcher for NBC on golf and the NFL. And that's fine. I always kind of thought Pete was a bit of a reach to be on the front side, front-facing camera on air. Smart kid, works hard, but I don't know. I was kind of like putting him on the air. Okay. Pete Haley had this tweet. This blows my mind, by the way. Went to Maryland, so he's a Terp. Enjoyed my time there. Okay, good. Really did. Bentley's ruled. That would be the bar of, not choice, but the bar of record in College Park, Bentley's. They had a banging food court, and I made great friends. Okay, all sounds good. That being said, tweets Pete Haley, dot, 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 whoa, wait, what? I don't have any affinity for the basketball program. Wow. Plus, I've got Florida winning it all. Therefore, I'd love to see Willard lose by 40 tonight. Wow. Talk about turning heel on your own school. First comment was, wow, Pete jumped off the top rope. I respect it, though. LOL. He responded by saying, look, it's tough to respect a coach who's doing this while his team is trying to break through. Drab shirt from JFK. I don't have any affinity for the basketball program, quote unquote. Yikes. Pete responded with IJS. I just said it. What does IGS, IJS stand for? I don't know. Others are saying, as a sports reporter and Maryland alum, how do you have no affinity for Maryland hoops? Pete said, it's entirely possible to go to a school, have fun at the games while you're there, which I did, and then leave and then move on. I mean, yeah, I suppose, but that notion cuts against what every tenet of assumed fandom and tribal loyalty is about, that you would just say, okay, I went, it was fun, I liked it, now I'm done. Others, LOL, how can you type this with a straight face and tell us that's normal? That's extremely odd. Just say you don't like college basketball. Another tweet, you sound like you order boneless wings. I mean, that, listen, I'm not judging. Hell, look at all the shit I got because when the Redskins died, I had to adopt a new team. Didn't have to, but I chose to adopt a new team, and it was the team that I cover as part of my new gig at 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee, which is the Green Bay Packers. And it's going to be my one and only move as a fan in football, and it was done solely because the team I grew up with died. Okay, the name, the logo, and the history and the tradition is being erased day by day, year by year. But that said, I've never heard of a take quite like that. Where do you stand out of where do you stand Thursday morning in Vegas? Wrong day about a take like that. So here's the games tonight, today, and here's what I'm going to bet just for the record. BYU, the sixth seed, taking on two seed Alabama, first game out of the gate. Alabama minus 4.5. Alabama is a tempo act, and they're a three-point act. Defense, they've heard of it. They'll try to play some if it's convenient. Otherwise, they don't care for it. BYU, I think, is going to be a tough out if they can hit their shots, if they can play offensively as well as they did against Wisconsin. So I'm taking BYU plus 4.5 as a sticky opponent for Alabama. Alabama, I do not think, will blow the doors off of BYU. Got $100 on that game. Then the Maryland-Florida game is next. Florida's minus 6.5. Now, without all the Willard stuff, you would look at it and say, Maryland barely got by Colorado State, a 10 seed. Florida is an absolute unit that finishes teams, even though UConn came back to make it a two-point game when the game was basically over. Fucked up the over as well, oh, by the way. But Florida should be the play here in normal circumstances, in my opinion, minus 6.5. And then you add in the Willard thing. It just seems like, why wouldn't you bet heavy against a superior team in Florida that has all the firepower you could ask for, and the other team's coach is 1 foot out the door? Seems like a no-brainer, right? Or is it what I like to call an Admiral Ackbar special for those of you Star Wars nerds? It's a trap! I would love to put $1,000 on Maryland to run into the flames, to run into the fire and say, you know what? Everyone's going to bet Florida because of the Willard thing, and guess what? They're going to be wrong. But I got a feeling if I did that, then I would sit there watching Florida win by 21 and me just going, I'm such a dummy. Why did I believe some stupid name for a gambling concept that's not even real based on a Star Wars character? So I'm going to double reverse it, and I'm on Florida for $100. So it could be a trap, should be a trap. I'd love to bet the Maryland side, but guess what? No, I'm going to not overthink it. I'm going to rethink the not overthinking. I'm on Florida -100 or -6.5 for $100. Duke, Arizona is the first of the two night games. Duke is, excuse me, Apple Watch. I wasn't talking to you. Thank you. Duke is -9.5 against Arizona. I don't know as much about Arizona as I should. I know Duke with a healthy Cooper Flag folds, spindles, and mutilates opponents to the tune of 20, 30, even more. Granted, their league was down this year, but there's a stat out there about how Duke under Shire is 15-5 as a favorite of 5 points or more against non-con opponents. 75%, that's a good trend, right? Here's the problem with that. Those non-con opponents, a lot of them are scrub games in December. And as bad as their conference has been this year, their non-cons have to be even weaker. So, you know, Arizona is not just a non-con like Wofford or someone like that. This is a real team from a power conference that's a 4 seed. So I'm not sure about that stat. It's a big number. Who wants to lay such a huge number when you could get backdoored on it? But fuck it, I'm taking Duke -9.5. I'm going to step up that game to $200. And then the last game of the night, Arkansas, Texas Tech. Texas Tech, the 3 seed. Arkansas, the 10 seed. Texas Tech -5.5. Most of the country, including myself, doesn't know shit about Texas Tech. We know that Coach Cal in Arkansas slipped in and then stunned a couple of teams to get here. They're the imposter. This is the round where imposters get thrown out of the club. The bouncers start talking into their earpieces or their microphones, you know, and they start looking, and it's like in a movie. You see the bouncer one. We got a guy in here. And then there's another bouncer. Yeah, I see him right there. They're wearing the pig shirt. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, we're coming in. This is when the bouncers converge on Arkansas and they throw their ass out. $200 on Texas Tech, -5.5.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
Let's talk LeBron and Stephen A. Smith. LeBron, well, before we get to Stephen A. Smith part of it, let's start with LeBron on Pat McAfee. LeBron James sat down and was a guest in studio with Pat McAfee for an hour on Wednesday. This before he had the game-winning tip-in against the Pacers in Indy, because, of course, McAfee produces from Indianapolis. I had to look, check again, think real hard and say, wait a minute, when was the last time Stephen A. Smith sat down for a long form interview or podcast for a property that is not his own, like the barbershop, a non-controlled situation? He never does this. And listening to some of the clips, I was like, okay, I like this. I'd like to hear more of an unguarded LeBron just sort of being, well, normal or close to normal. Of course, LeBron showed his ass in multiple ways during this hour. I've not watched the whole thing, but I've seen clips. But it's a credit to McAfee that he got him. Now, I understand why. McAfee is the softest, easiest couch to sit on as an athlete. He is Oprah's couch. McAfee is not going to A, make you look bad, or B, criticize you in any way. And McAfee knows that. McAfee has chosen that lane as the affable dude bro punter, life is good, let's go have a day, football, all right, you know, non-judgmental, the whole thing. And that's smart for McAfee. It doesn't make it as compelling for my likes as somebody who's consuming the media, because I want some challenging questions asked, but how about that he got him to come in? Now, did he pay LeBron? Because he pays Rodgers. Who knows? But here's a tweet that I think I agree with completely. Pat McAfee really just got the best LeBron interview the media could ever dream of, and it was during the season. Kids don't understand how goated Pat truly is for this. I'm sure Bron has never done a sit-down interview in his entire career unless it was on his platform. That's exactly what I was thinking. Also, Mad Dog Russo, who understands how hard it is to get people to sometimes sit down and talk to you, had this to say.
Great job by McAfee. You know, getting a guy in there for an hour. I know they're playing the Pacers tonight. That's a great job.
In studio.
Give him credit. That's a hell of a spot. Who not want to talk to LeBron for an hour? Wendy can. He never come on with me. That's a great spot. Give him credit for that. Go ahead.
He wouldn't come on with me. No, I don't think so.
Shout to PMAC. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he'd probably harm somebody if they even approached him about coming on with me.
I'm not so sure, Stevie. I think two of you'd be a good spot.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to watch that myself.
All right, let's
watch.
I'd like to stay on topic here, and I'd like to stay in the past because that's what we're doing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Russo, realizing this was a big get right there. Of course, then LeBron was asked about Stephen A. Smith. Wouldn't mention him by name, but said, "Oh, I know he's just got to be smiling now that I'm talking about this." LeBron explained why he went up to him courtside and how he didn't want to address the video either, and how you know that Stephen A. Smith is loving the attention on this. Stephen A. Smith then went on a podcast and made one of the most ludicrous claims ever. Well, he went on his own podcast. Who is calling my room right now? What is that ding-donging going on? Never mind. Stephen A. Smith had the following to say about the confrontation courtside.
That man put his hands on me, I would have immediately swung on him. Immediately.
Oh, really?
That man put his hands on me, I would have immediately swung on him.
Do you know how many people would have loved to have seen the 6'8", 250-pound chiseled LeBron James just stuff that Muppet Stephen A. Smith into a tiny burlap sack? I'd become a LeBron fan if he did that. But Stephen A. Smith is full of shit. Stephen A. did admit that he would get his ass beat, but that if he put his hands on me, I would have fought him right there. You know what this has really become now? As we zoom out and go, wait a minute. Where's the commentary on the games and the teams and the coaches and the players and the standings and the playoffs and, you know, the sports part of this? Well, ESPN has just become a soap opera. A soap opera between certain characters, and a bad soap opera at that. So then Stephen A. went off about, hey, LeBron should be happy that I'm not going deeper on some other things that would make him look bad, like this.
I suggest that he be happy with the things that I haven't brought up. I never brought up really and never really discussed why you were not at Kobe Bryant's memorial service. I never really brought up or discussed why you did not attend Dwayne Wade's Hall of Fame induction when that man was directly responsible for you capturing a championship for the first time in your career. I brought up none of that.
He went on to elaborate on that, but there's one problem. LeBron was at Kobe Bryant's memorial. He just was not on camera. Some believe that he asked the producers of that memorial, in which all kinds of basketball luminaries spoke. Diana Taurasi even made a joke about LeBron and looked over at LeBron, even though they didn't show LeBron. And now numerous community notes on Twitter are pointing out that, yes, LeBron was there. So Stephen A. Smith either lied or did not know that LeBron was there. Either way, that's really, really bad. And I'm just wondering what ESPN thinks of this. Do they not care because they've got this juicy little soap opera going on? Or are they seriously going, what have we given this guy $100 million for? He is going to end up embarrassing us because his ego is now way, way out of check. Stephen A. also said, when you retire, let's see how much I talk about you then. You won't matter much, I promise you. Oh, now you'll talk about him plenty. Don't kid yourself. Of course, LeBron didn't come off great in some of these clips either. There's a dumb one here about Giannis and whether he could play back in the day. Take a listen.
You trying to tell me Giannis wouldn't be able to play an NBA game in the 70s?
Hitcher, he wouldn't be able to do
Giannis. Yeah, neither would you.
Giannis Antetokounmpo would have 250 points in a game in the 70s.
Okay. No one, who is saying that? Who is saying that Giannis couldn't play in the 70s? It goes the other way. It's like, would there be a spot in the NBA for AC Green today, given the fact he didn't do much of anything? He was just sort of a steady player. Nothing spectacular, but he played tons of games, tons of minutes, many, many years with the Lakers as a power forward. That's the way the argument normally goes. Who the hell is saying that Giannis couldn't play in the 70s, for God's sakes? I know some people go, oh, the checking rules. Hand checking was a lot tougher. You know, they didn't. I don't know what he's talking about there. Also, LeBron denied that he flops all the time.
Because I am, like, literally over, like, the last 5-6 years, why everybody's been claiming I flop all the time. I'm, like, in the bottom half of free throw attempts per game.
Oh, they won't give you the whistle.
You don't get the whistle.
No.
Superstar treatment?
You know the funny thing?
Okay, so it's not, you know, all the time is a very broad term. He flops way too much for a superstar. And his flops are egregious flops. That's part of the problem. That's the biggest part of the problem. That's why he is not respected by many people, certainly older guys like me, because the flopping is so egregious and so pathetic. Does he get enough foul calls? I don't know, for a superstar. I mean, Jordan didn't get as much as he should either. Hell, the Pistons created something called the Jordan Rules, which was just fucking foul the shit out of them all the time, because guess what? They can't call them all, and they won't call them all. Then there was this from LeBron on old Brian Windhorst, old Windy, who I had for many years dubbed as LeBron's mouthpiece, a guy who has been very generous and supportive of LeBron, having known him from when he was in high school in Ohio. You would think that LeBron would be at least respectful of old Windy. Not so much.
I see a lot of shit, too. Like, I seen Brian Windhorst on one of these shows not too long ago. Like,
Windy!
Yeah,
you played there. Windy, you guys played together in high school.
Yeah, this guy was like, you know, says he's like my fucking best friend. These guys are just weird. But
okay, he never said that, Windhorst. And notice how the jocks are teaming up on the nerd. Hey, you guys played in high school together. Who said that? That's the jock saying, look at that fat nerd. Nerd. That's bullshit by LeBron, because Windhorst has been professional and overall supportive of LeBron when many people thought he was being a shill for him, and LeBron just put something in his mouth saying, he's my best fucking friend. Get out of here. Anyway, it's a further lowering of the bar of what ESPN once was. And Ryan Glasspiegel, who I'm going to try to get on the pod, I've been reaching out to him, front office sports, media, and entertainment reporter, says that the problem with this being ESPN's trajectory now, being a bad soap opera, is because it's cheap and it gets clicks, it gets eyeballs. He talked about how he yearns, had tweeted, let's see here. Why did this get blocked on me? Come on. You're unable to view this post because the account owner limits who can view their posts. Oh, well, maybe I've been blocked by this person. Who knows? But this person said, I miss the days of Outside the Lines and E60 and Baseball Tonight and a bunch of other shows ESPN used to do. And basically Ryan said, look, this is a product and an artifact of the age we live in. And Lord be it for me to agree with Jamel Hill, but Jamel Hill says, look, these investigative shows. Oh, yeah, Real Sports with Brian Gumbel also no longer. They all had the run, by the way. No show lasts forever. But she said these are very expensive shows to produce, and they don't generate enough audience, and therefore they cannot be monetized to a return in which the company thinks is worthwhile. And she's not wrong about that. We vote with our eyes. And unfortunately, there's too many eyeballs watching First Take on a regular basis. Now, I know I'm talking about them, so you'll say I'm part of the problem because I'm promoting it. I guess, but I don't watch it. There's enough people out there sitting crisscross applesauce like little Johnny on the floor. Look what Stephen A. said. What Stephen A. said about this. Anyway, on the ESPN front, one more thing they announced. It was reported by Andrew Marchand, that ESPN is closing their LA Bureau of SportsCenter and that the 30 or so jobs and front-facing camera, on-camera talent that had been out there, Stan Verrett, Linda Cohn, forget who else is on the West Coast satellite studio for ESPN. They've been told, yes, we're moving the operation back to Bristol, Connecticut. So if you would like to keep your job, then you can just call Beacon's moving van lines and get them to move you to Bristol, Connecticut from LA. Dagger. That is a dagger. But if you say no, good luck landing another TV job that pays as well, that is as high profile as ESPN and SportsCenter. They're going to keep some of the NBA people out there, but the SportsCenter people, it was a good ride while it lasted, and now the ride is over. Russell Wilson was at a Knicks game. Why? Because he's now a New York Giant. Russell Wilson was also sitting courtside, of course, because that's what he does. Beautiful wife, Ciara, right next to him. Russell Wilson had a brand new Wilson football, Duke football, NFL football that he autographed, turned around, and then hucked up into the stands some 30 or 40 rows. He was wearing a hat that said, let me get this right here. Hold on. Yes. He was wearing a hat that says Real, R-E-A-L, in big letters. I don't know what that means. So I asked my two best Steeler fan buddies, Houston Scotty and Nate from Pennsylvania. I said, boys, I got questions. One, who brought the ball? Two, was it intercepted and returned for a TD? And three, what does the hat Real mean? Houston Scotty said, he brought the ball because he's that focused. He's all ball all the time. Yes, he's the ultimate try-hard cringe guy, Russell Wilson. Number two, he says, the guy in section 114 ran the wrong route, and the guy in section 122 is now pissed it wasn't thrown his way and refuses to leave his seat now. Reference to the Steelers wideouts last year in their wideout room. And the third thing is, I've looked on the interwebs and I see no relation to what actually the hat means, R-E-A-L. That's pretty damn funny. Thank you, Scotty, for that. So I mentioned the ESPN baseball thing. Baseball begins today. Don't blink. The season goes by so quick. 162 games. And here was Russo talking to Rob Manfred, the commissioner, about why they decided to part ways with ESPN after ESPN said, "How about we? I know we got a contract, you know, legally. We're supposed to pay you X millions of dollars, but about half of that." Here was Manfred talking to Russo on SiriusXM about what happened.
Were you surprised? Were you keeled over when ESPN said they were going to opt out of the contract? Well, or did you see it coming?
Well, I didn't have to see it. I could read it. I mean, you know, there were leaks going back a year. You know, unfortunate that that was the mode of communication, but, you know, it was...
So nobody from ESPN picked up the phone and said, "Rob, this is what we're thinking about," and that bothers you?
Well, eventually it got to the point that they told us what they were thinking, but we had been reading leaks for over a year
Good
before
answer. Okay.
That phone call took place. And that's unfortunate. It did not help the conversations. There was a level of dissatisfaction on our part. It started, you know, with the end of Baseball Tonight. I think if you watch ESPN, and I do, you know, where we appear on SportsCenter in the morning, there were issues.
Hey, I can answer that better than anybody. We only did one segment today, an opening day, Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So if anybody can mention it, you're talking to me.
Yeah. And, you know, look, there's a level of dissatisfaction with that. Having said that, you know, did we want to be partners with him? Yes. But, you know, taking less money.
Not going to happen.
And look, I'll say this publicly because I said it to them. You know, they stepped up for the NBA. They stepped up for football, you know, stepped up for this one. And to come back to us and say, you know, we want to cut you.
That's a good point, Rob. So you felt hurt.
Yeah.
You felt hurt.
The sport
felt hurt.
Yeah. We felt like we were being treated in a way.
Disrespectfully.
Yeah. And I mean, particularly given if you listen to their own rhetoric when they were marketing baseball, you know, we were up for them. Last year, we are up on 18 to 34s. We deliver a nice Hispanic audience. We do a great job in terms of gender breakdown. So, you know, like I said, it was an unfortunate thing. They were a great, great partner. The one thing I will give them credit for, I do think, you know, they've at least said, you know, we're going to do a great job this year. And I think a lot of their talent has been out there saying, you know, we want to do a great job. And who knows, you know, life's long.
Yeah, I didn't watch baseball tonight because I'm not that big of a baseball fan, but I liked that it was there. I felt right that it was there, that the sport, which is a major sport that still has massive amounts of fans that attend ballparks all over the country. You cannot kill baseball. Baseball's dying, they say. Been saying that my whole professional radio career. It's still going very strong. The salary cap, or lack thereof, I should say, has not killed baseball. The payroll disparity has not killed baseball. You cannot kill baseball. I just like the fact that ESPN had baseball tonight. Maybe I'd want to pop in just to take a gander at it. Maybe I needed help falling asleep one night. I tuned in. But the question I have is, so baseball tonight couldn't have been a money loser, right? It could certainly monetize that show so it makes some money. Maybe not their most profitable, not as much as PTI or First Take or whatever. But if it's making money and if it's covering a sport that is a major sport, can you not just still have it in your catalog of products? It just seems crazy. But this ties into another question I have about Vegas, and I'll get to it in just a second. There was Manfred on the ESPN baseball situation. Two more media notes, and then I'll wrap on Vegas thoughts. Gary Danielson is going to be making his last ride on CBS calling college football this season. Gary Danielson is a fine analyst. He's not spectacular, but he's good. He's a comfortable voice. May he have a great final ride through this year's games. Jim Nantz says he plans to retire from calling the Masters. in 11 years. 2036. This is taking the Dan Patrick, I'm retiring in 5 years, statement to a whole new level. I think it would make it 50 years even for Nance, and that's the way he wants to go out. Listen, God bless them both, but I don't like talking past tomorrow or next week at the most. Life is finite, short, and not promised to any of us other than this day, so I will keep it just day to day. I woke up today in Vegas, and that's a good thing. Waking up in Vegas is a wonderful thing. Going to talk about the great Katy Perry song, Waking Up in Vegas, to end here. My thoughts on Vegas after just one day here, and the rest of the Zabe Vegas startup crew is coming today. The Wisco Mafia, the alternate Wisco Mafia, led by the White Rhino, Ryan McElwee, who helped get me this wonderful room at Vidara. I do like Vidara as a property. It's not a casino. It's a condo. It's like a hotel, but there's no casino in the bottom of it. It's right next to Aria, and it's beautiful. It's lovely. Now, the standard room rate for tonight would have been $330. Because Rhino's got great M Life rewards, he was able to book the room and get it for like $169 or something. It's beautiful. It's like a little mini suite, little mini studio. They got a little kitchenette in here for extended stays. Lovely. I do recommend. But Vegas remains very popular. Visitor numbers are strong. I think they're slightly up over the last couple of years. Plus 5%, plus 2%, something like that. Obviously, Vegas continues to change. The reports of the gouging on prices for everything and the charging just to sit in a seat in front of a big screen TV to watch big sporting events, whether it's the Super Bowl, an NFL Sunday, or March Madness, is still a thing. We'll know further as we go to watch the games tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Where can we get a good spot to sit and watch the games, and do we have to pay a food and bev minimum or anything else like that? Vegas is very popular. It's becoming less and less of what I used to like about Vegas, though, and that is simply this. The number of slot machines that are in every casino is mind-boggling, and they are not even close to being full of asses pulling the handles or pressing the buttons. Just not even close. And the number of live table games, mostly blackjack and craps and roulette, those were the big three back in the day, have dwindled down to the point where, as I was walking around last night to a couple of different casinos, I just noticed how few straight blackjack tables there were. And of course, the blackjack tables that look like you could just play straight blackjack, even with shitty rules like 6-5 payouts on 21s, they had all these side hustles. You know, that if you put a chip on one of the side things, then if it's, you know, straight flush, or if you get, you know, ace, jack, whatever, you get a bonus. These are called the carnival games, side games that add significantly to the house edge. They're sucker bets. The biggest of sucker bets. But I just found very few blackjack tables at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Now it's Wednesday, so I get it. It's the lowest leverage, slowest night of the week, I'm imagining. And yeah, it was frustrating. It was disappointing. And they're all $25 or more. And I'm a $15 a table guy. That's where I'm comfortable. And there used to be ample places to play for 15 or even less. And with live dealers now, they've got a lot of these hybrid setups where you can sit at a computerized sort of kiosk and a seat, and then they've got one person dealing up on a stage, and it's digitally delivered, and they've got cameras. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat, sort of like the automated self-checkout lines at the grocery store. They're doing that more and more here in Vegas. Once upon a time, believe it or not, you could easily walk the strip. You didn't have to go up a set of stairs or up an escalator, over a walkway, over another walkway. You would just walk down the strip, wait for the, you know, walk, don't walk light to, you know, go green, and then go into another casino that had ample number of blackjack tables for $15. And it was 3-2, by the way, for blackjack. Those days are gone. And they are never coming back. It's too bad because I understand corporations, profitability, they want the most bang for their buck. Hiring a live person, paying them health benefits, all that other stuff that goes with live bodies dealing live blackjack. The more you can get rid of it, the more money you're going to make. But you're telling me that you can't make money on a blackjack game staffed by a live person where I can sit down at $15 a hand and play for an hour, hour and a half, and I might lose. If I start with $200, I might end up with $100 after an hour. But I feel like, okay, I had a good time. I whooped it up. Yeah, I doubled down. Let's go. And I high-fived the people at the table. And sure, I ended up losing money, but it was fun. Now it's go in hot, $25 table, double your buy-in, and hold on for dear life. I can't tell you the number of times in which I go to sit down playing blackjack and I never win it. I'm never up. I'm never up. And I'm playing by standard strategy. So it's changed in that regard. There is a ton of escalators that are out in this town all over the place. Vegas is overbuilt and under maintained, in my opinion. There's construction on the strip thanks to various projects. And there's always been construction. The strip is always reinventing itself and new places come and old places go. I get that, but there is more construction than ever. The scale and complexity of the casinos continues to stun me every time I'm here, where you sit there and you look and you stand out on the curb and you go, oh, Paris is right there. It's real close. And then you start walking and then you start keep walking. And then you're like, damn, am I getting any closer? It's right there. It's because the scale of all these casinos and all these properties is so massive. Keep that in mind. And there's also, I think, a huge lack of late night grub. Again, it's 11 p.m. last night. I'm a little hangry. I need a snack. I need something warm and delicious. Give me something. You would think there would be these little grub stands, like food trucks, basically. That's what Vegas needs. They need food trucks right on the strip. I'm diving into one casino after another, going into the bowels, saying, what restaurant? Is there any restaurant open? Is there a quick serve place? Where can I get a damn bite to eat? And of course, I ended up back at Moneyline Pizza at Aria because that's the one place that reliably is open late and has really good pizza. Really good pizza because they use the proprietary cup and char pepperoni. Yes, it's a specific style of pepperoni. You can look it up. Cup and char, in which when you cook it, curls up on the edges, gets a crispy rim, and it keeps all the delicious grease swimming in the little pool that is the pepperoni. We'll end on this. One of my absolute favorite pop music bangers is Waking Up in Vegas with Katy Perry. 2008. It only peaked at number 9. It was not a number 1 hit, but it was a pretty iconic song in Katy Perry's amazing run in the late aughts. That was 16 years ago, 2008. She was 24 years old. She's now 40. Of course, I was 40 back then. I'm now 56. Time marches on and I friggin' hate it. Song was written by Desmond Child and Andreas Carlson, and of course chronicled a young couple having this wild up and down night in Las Vegas. The video is also epic as well. It has cameos from Penn and Teller, the Maloof brothers who owned the Palms at the time. Her boyfriend in this video is Joel David Moore, who's played a number of kind of hipster nerd guys. He looks nerdy enough that you're like, that guy's kind of ugly. Look at his big nose. But man, his girlfriend's, look at how hot she is. It let you as the viewer go, I'd like to overachieve, outkick my coverage like that. But just a great song. Total banger, everybody. You get the way. So I woke up in Vegas today, a little groggy, but no worse for the wear. And today I'm going to go play Rio Seco with my boy, the Desert Fox, Kevin Werkus. And then we're going to meet up with the fellas from Wisconsin to come on and watch some basketball. Then we're going to Joe's Stone Crabs for dinner. Life is pretty fucking good, even though I can't find a $15 table to save my life. All right, 46 minutes of me and sound bites and music later. On vacation, technically. Goddamn, not a bad podcast by me. Give it up. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.